Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, August 31st. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and joining us, horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. We welcome your gardening calls right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Always a popular program, this is. So use those green thumbs to get your calls in early. Why? Here they come now. When the light's on, it means you don't walk in the door. Oh, you're in now. Forget it. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's the gardening show, and boy, are they enthusiastic. It's almost time right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and may I say the gardeners are champing at the bit. I've seldom seen such enthusiasm for a program. Bob Graves is here. He is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back. How are you?
See the enthusiasm? This is great.
We really are fired up today.
It's amazing. Yeah, the number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. If you have a gardening question, or you may email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Bob, you and Greg were talking about, I don't know if you were lamenting the fact, but you were surprised that the fall season is upon us so quickly.
The fall season is here. Yeah, folks are looking for mums and pumpkins. And we had this last, week or two of cooler weather, and it just sets everybody thinking.
It'll be cool tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah.
And September is really a great time to sort of do some garden renovation, especially your perennial borders. Dig them up, move things around, divide them, because we do have, even though it's cold tonight, we still have 5, 6, 7 weeks of good rooting weather. So if you're thinking of moving that peony, or, and then of course fall bulbs, if you're
bulbs are in,
yeah, if you're thinking of tulips, daffodils, this is all of course for next spring. It's the beginning of kind of planning that out.
We all say this every year, but fall is arguably the best time to plant.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, because you get a chance for a plant to get some roots established and have some backup systems before you get into the hot weather next summer.
Yeah, it's also easier to keep the plant watered once you get it in the ground. So it's you water it in well, and you often, a couple of waterings between now and frost, and that's about it. Whereas if you put it in the summer, you're kind of a slave to that plant. You got to keep it watered and fed. So fall, great time to put plants in the ground.
All right, gentlemen, you ready for some call? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was saying, speaking Greg. Of water, I just would like to mention it. I don't know about over here, because you were getting water the last time we spoke, but the Berkshires have gotten a little dry now.
Yeah,
a little dry.
We have also dried up here.
Yeah. And so just a reminder that if you have planted, or, of course, if you're planting, you'll remember, but if you have already planted this year, making sure that you don't forget, put it back on the calendar that you're going to water those plants,
It only takes a week or 10 days for things to dry out.
Yep. And it's a good point, because this time of year is when most of the trees and shrubs, the woody plants, really store energy and water for next year's leaf out. And a lot of people think, this time of year I don't have to worry about it. But actually, August, September, they probably do more storage than anything else. So if you want to help your plant leaf out and make it through the winter, this is a great time to water even existing plants.
All right, now we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we kick it off with Sarah in Beckett, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on.
Unlike the gentlemen who are there chomping at the bit to garden, I find it a chore. Right now, I have, I live in the country, really in the woods, and the grass is mowed, but I have people do it. And I was thinking of converting to a wildflower field and just having it mowed down in September or at the end of the summer. And what's the best way to go about that?
Well, I know at the Arboretum we have converted sections where we would mow in the past, like fields, and just seems like a lot of extra mowing, wear and tear on equipment, gas, but also we're trying to be green and, you know, do things more ecologically friendly. So we have actually decided to sort of make some of those mowed areas turn into sort of wildflower fields. And just sort of like you said, we wait till sort of late fall because there's a lot of ground nesting birds that'll be in there until usually October we start brush hog fields. And you'll typically want to brush hog them once or maybe even twice a year. We typically do ours once a year, and that keeps away all the woody plants. And then we sometimes will overseed with wildflower mixes in there. And
okay.
When you do that, you often will get certain wildflowers that tend to really take off and do really good with it. So if you do use a mix and you only see three or four different kinds of wildflowers, don't be surprised. You know, you don't get in 12 or 13.
A lot of the seeds in those mixes are annuals, too. So it's the sort of thing you may do every year. And as Fred said, some of the perennials that are in there are going to overtake it unless you help it along a little bit.
And if your yard is not 2 acres or 5 acres, if you're talking about just a few thousand square feet, you could, cut it midsummer. You could cut it more than once so that it stays a little shorter. It's really, for bird habitat, it's usually a, 4 or 5 acre
larger
field
tracks, we're talking,
or bigger. In other words, then you could also just mow some of the edges. So you just mow paths, and that way you're kind of wandering through this very pleasant meadow. And it's not just birds out there, a lot of pollinators, a lot of butterflies to watch.
That's nice.
Yep. It's becoming more popular, and it's a great way to, I think, proceed.
Sarah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
My 800-348-2551 is our telephone number on Vox Pop. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward here. It is The Gardening Show. Let's go to Richard in Corinth. Richard.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My high bush blueberry, the leaves started turning fall colors while it was still plenty warm 3 or 4 weeks ago. I'm wondering if you might have an idea why that happened. I was wondering if they were just shy on nutrients. I've got the soil pH finally after about 2 seasons of adding sulfur. So I think that's okay.
I would say that they've been in the ground for several years, or it's just a year or two?
Yeah.
Several?
Yeah, several years. Yeah. And I hadn't seen them, I don't remember them turning, the orange and red, and even starting to drop the leaves, anywhere near as early other years. And I've kept them well watered.
Yep. Yeah, so that was the question is, was there some drought stress? Is there too much water that actually could stress them as well into showing some color? And then just nutrients, if the plants are aggressively growing through July and even August, putting out that new growth, then obviously that would be dark green and not red. But if they have stopped growing because the soil quality is not ideal, then sure, those leaves were the leaves from June, and they're a little tired now.
Yeah, the premature coloring is always a sign of stress of some sort.
Yep.
And often the symptoms at the leaf level of overwatering and underwatering are often the same.
Mm.
It's exactly it. A lot of times right now, like red maples are coloring up, and the ones that I see the most colorful are in the wet areas, and those trees even like water.
Yeah,
right.
They like water.
Right.
So overwatering will do the same as underwatering in terms of leaf color.
Okay, but it could be just not, that I haven't applied any fertilizer to them, so it could be lack of nutrients.
Yes.
Yeah.
And my recommendation would be, you're controlling the pH, which is great. That way they're able to take up the nutrients that are available. But these, you're asking these plants to create flowers, to create fruit, to really be, active, and fertilizer, making sure that the nutrients are there for them, and that would be a spring application in general, is happening because you're asking for a lot of demand.
Yep, and you could put it down in the fall, but I would wait till about half of the leaves are pretty much gone, half to two-thirds of the leaves. So you want a later fall or solid fall, not early fall, because that could stimulate growth, and you don't want that now.
Right.
And
I've always heard that.
Yeah. So late. Later fall, I usually say about two-thirds of the leaf drop down, you're not going to wake that plant up with fertilizer. Now it's in place for spring, and you could even follow it with a spring application.
All right, Richard, we have to move it along here, but thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Quickly before our break, let's go to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
Hello there. How you doing?
Good.
I was wondering, somebody gave me some green tomatoes. How would I get them ripe? Do I put them on the windowsill or a paper bag, somebody told me, or...
Paper bag is a good way to do it.
Definitely, yeah. And I would say, actually, a trick that I've learned over the years is that you actually add a banana.
What?
Add a banana to the bag. So one or two tomatoes in the paper bag
ethylene.
In dark, and ethylene's released from the banana, but the tomato doesn't have its own natural occurring ethylene that'll ripen them. So you throw a couple of tomatoes in a brown paper bag, put it in a dark place, throw a banana in there with them, and you're guaranteed you're going to ripen. You're going to ripen them right up.
Or make some green tomato mincemeat.
Okay.
What does that banana do?
It releases a gas that is naturally occurring, ethylene, and that's the gas that actually helps to ripen the fruit. And tomatoes would do that if they could, but they don't naturally produce that.
Or very much of it.
Yeah. Yep.
So how do they ripen then?
Well, they'll do it over the course of the summer and during the season. But when you get to the end of that season, you got a bunch. You speed it up.
Why are our tomatoes in our garden are always green? They never ripen. What's up with that?
They never ripen?
Well, they're still green.
It's the world's worst garden.
It's been a little slow this year for tomatoes. Everyone's kind of delayed. That said, you should be getting some red tomatoes.
November?
I think today would have been good.
Today?
yesterday?
How much sun are they getting? Right?
Oh, no, there's no sun.
There you go.
Well, that's part of it.
No, there's a little sun.
Try planting a banana tree back there.
You need bananas.
Okay, everybody's a wiseacre. Let's take a break. 800-348. I got to straighten these guys out. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
For WMC comes from George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of mums, shrubs, and trees for fall planting and bulbs for spring. Open Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, and Sundays, 9 to 4. A gardener's destination. StoriesNursery.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication. Used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. Vermont Coffee Company. Offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company. Coffee roasted for friends. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, The Gardening Show. Welcome back. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's see, we have Bob Graves here. We had Fred Breglia here. He's still here. And Greg Ward is here. And Fred, I know there are all kinds of things going on at the Landis Arboretum.
Yeah, well, the big one, which it's hard to believe we're talking about this already, but I guess it is getting a little bit cooler, so it's time to talk about a fall plant sale.
Oh, yeah.
And this year's plant sale is 16th and 17th of September, runs from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Admission, parking, always free. We have free tours offered on Saturday with both me and Ed Miller, who's the founder of the Native Plant Trail. We have a fantastic bake sale there, arguably one of the best bake sales around.
Why?
There's an incredible amount of homemade baked items that the volunteers pull together.
You're biased, though, right?
I am probably biased.
Okay, so yeah. It might not be the best.
But I don't have a major sweet tooth, and yet I end up eating major amounts of sweets there. So, it could be biased. It could be that they really are that good.
Do you eat a lot of bark?
you know, there's a lot of nutrition, they say, in bark. Okay. The original Native Americans called a lot of them bark eaters.
Okay. Well, you know, that's fine. Anything else going on?
We also have a really amazing book sale there, too, in part of our barn. So use gardening books and more. Visit landisarboretum.org.
Well played, sir. And Greg Ward.
Oh, my gosh. I'm on.
You're on.
So we have a... three or four classes coming up this month in September. We have a bulbs indoor and out. You know, what kinds are there? You know, where to put them? Kind of timing if you're just sort of trying to, you know, have some really fun. I would never know whether to call them fall bulbs or spring bulbs. So in our industry, there are spring bulbs. Those are the bulbs you plant in the spring. And then there are fall bulbs. Mm. Those are the ones you plant in the fall. But the fall bulbs bloom in the spring.
Oh boy!
So it's a little confusing. Anyway, we'll also talk about forcing bulbs, which is, you know, sounds like you're not being nice to the bulb, but in fact you're putting them in a container in a pot with soil. You're keeping them cool and moist for several weeks at where they're then available to you to bring out and have bloom in your house in February.
Oh,
it's really fun.
It's
nice.
tricking the bulbs.
And then just briefly, there's a garden problem-solving panel that will happen. That'll be October 14th. So just like this, only it'll happen.
Can I be on that panel?
You can.
I have a lot of expertise.
You can. And then a house plants 101, how to grow and keep your house plants.
Very cool. And what's your website?
My website is wardsnursery.com. And those are all on Saturdays and Sundays starting mid-September.
And those all the info on the site? Can you learn all about that?
All you have to do is go to the website, yes.
And what is that website again?
Wardsnursery.com.
All right. And Bob Graves, it's a tough act to follow, but what have you got going on over at Fadigan's?
Well, I'm just going to recommend go to our website, too, fadigansnursery.com. We have some seminars upcoming, a bunch of them. I'm going to do one on lawn care. We've got actually an interesting one coming up with an expert on hydrangeas who's going to come in and talk about hydrangeas, which is a very popular topic these days.
That's a big topic.
Hydrangeas
right there.
Are just exploding in popularity.
Why are they so popular now?
Because they flower for a long period of time, and they flower in the summer.
Are they easy to keep?
Yeah, relatively.
That's it. America's gone lazy.
Oh, okay.
Well, they have some idiosyncrasies that to get them to keep coming back. That's why often they get these hydrangea questions here time and time again. Because they're not all the same. There are some different varieties in there, and they all require
different care. There's some really easy ones.
There are some really easy ones.
Okay, and once again, the website over at Fadigan's is?
Fadigan's.com.
All right, sir. Let's do a couple of emails, and then we'll get back to the phones. The one line open here on the phones, and that's 800-348-2551. Okay, emails. Variegated dogwood. I have a variegated dogwood bush that seems to be dying. Parts of the plant look perfectly healthy, but many branches have leaves that have turned brown and are falling off. Should I trim all the dead parts off and hope it will come back next year? And that's from Thea.
Sounds like anthracnose.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fungal problems on those leaves this time of year.
Yep, and it's not uncommon to see that on dogwood. This year, fungal problems worse than normal. You're not going to be able to do too much with it at this time of year. So you're really looking at... if you want to prevent that for future, you are going to want to have that either sprayed or injected for anthracnose moving into next season.
There's these variegated shrubs do get a lot of leaf spotting as well, and that is rain related. So if it's just the leaf spotting, it can just be a seasonal.
It's probably okay.
Yeah
if it's just the leaves. If the branches are dying back, that's going to be the next level, and that's the nastier fungus.
All right, this one's from M in Mount Tremper. I have a problem with a web of wisteria shoots and runners taking over my property. Some go for hundreds of feet and more. I've tried cutting the shoots after they've leafed out in spring and over as advised on your show, but they don't ever seem to lose energy. Last year, I hired someone to cut down most of the mature trunks from my house, and it's almost all back. Help! And that's from M in Mount Tremper.
Sounds like bittersweet, but I don't really know what plant it is that we're talking about. And you know, cutting more regularly, so not just once, but following up with that would be what we'd say, right?
Yep, and also the timing, especially aggressively in the spring, because the plant will use most of its energy up in the spring to put the new set of leaves on, a woody plant, assuming this is a woody vine, sounds like it is.
It just seems to be more vigorous in the last few years, just, too. My imagination, maybe, but boy.
There's more of it.
And what would account for that?
Birds spread it. Yeah, the seeds are almost all viable. The birds like it, and it's not a native, so it just... can take hold, and it's listed as an invasive. And you know, spring is really the best time to any time is good to cut it. But the spring, after it uses that energy up, yep, go after it. It'll send up some resprouts. Go after it again. If it sends up any more, go after it again. And I've been able to control woody plants, vines that way pretty. But you got to stay on top of it.
And if you can identify the leaf when they're young, which they all look the same, but if you look around for small seedlings, you know, just pull those out like you're weeding your garden.
Right. Mm.
That way they don't turn into big things that you have to cut.
That's fair enough. This one is from Deirdre in Lanesboro, Mass. We have four apple trees on our farm that are about 60 years old. Although the trees had been neglected for some time before we purchased the farm 3 years ago, they produced a lot of apples. We had an arborist prune the trees about 2.5 years ago, and since then, we have had few to zero apples. Any theories, advice? And that's from Deirdre.
Usually when you have a very old tree, you want to renovate it, but that process, that pruning process, it's suggested that you take a few years to do that. You don't do it all at once. So if it was done all at once and a lot of that wood was taken out, then it's been sort of spending this time growing, not setting a lot of flowers. It's all about, it needs flowers. Those flowers then need to get pollinated, and that can be affected by different weather patterns, frost, etc. And then you get fruit. So
can also be coincidental. We've had a couple bad years.
Yes.
It could be coincidental.
This year, not so much, but the last couple of years were not great.
Right. Because of
cold weather.
Cold snaps in the spring. A lot of orchards had a lot of problems. So maybe coincidental. I don't know what type of pruning they did.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was a certified
arborist
or not.
But it's a good thing regardless to have pruned them. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. One more email and then back to the phones. This is from Marion in Stone Ridge. And Marion writes, I've noticed a lot of crab apple trees, including my own, that look terrible. Ours is 50-plus years old. Trees don't live forever. But when I noticed some others looking like ours, I wondered if something more than old age was going on. Do you know?
Yeah, and that's mostly that apple scab. We talked to you a little bit about that, Ray, earlier on.
One of the many things I was complaining about before the show.
You know, this year is really a big year for apple scab. The good thing about apple scab is it causes a major defoliation and an unsightliness, but it occurs at the end of summer. And at that point, the trees are kind of shutting down and they're getting ready to kind of shed leaves. So it's not usually a life-threatening issue. Most of the time, it comes back and looks really good.
We had all this rain.
This rain has been
just
prolific
of all
with
this
it.
Rain.
Yep.
Yep.
And
they'll be fine.
They will be.
Well, that's good to know.
But as I mentioned to you with those maple leaves, you want to try to rake them up, get them off site, because next year's infection, the spores, are going to sit on those leaves and break down and be right underneath the tree if you don't rake them up, or use a bagger on your mower and suck them up and don't compost them. Get them off site.
Okay, very good.
That'll
Let's
help.
Go back to the phones and Nicole in Nassau. Nicole, you're on.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. I may have made a mistake. I'm not sure. But early last spring, I had a couple house plants that had white fly, and I put them out on my patio when it was still fairly cold. They were like geraniums. And I don't know what happened, but I have white fly over my entire garden. I mean, they're on my zucchini and my mint and everywhere.
Yeah, probably not the same white fly, but yes, it is. White fly are having a great time. This is their season outside. This is what they normally do. The trick is not to bring any inside with that geranium if you're going to save it again. And that can be done with some insecticides, with applying a horticultural oil, insecticidal soap to those plants a few times before you bring them inside.
Yeah, one shot doesn't do it. Whitefly has five different instars, that is five different egg stages. And the oils will kill some of those stages, but not all of them. So you have to do it multiple times.
Reducing the
plant. Well, I got the safer soap, but it was so thick it was hard to spray.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also reducing the plant before you, everyone wants the plant and all those flowers and everything, but one of the ways to make it easy is to actually cut the plant back severely, the geranium, so that there's very little to spray. That way you treat less surface area more effectively, and then when you bring it in, it will start, if you have a nice sunny place in the house, it will fill out and be blooming maybe by January, if not sooner.
Right. Are there some conditions in the house that promote it?
Yeah, just the fact that it's inside and there are no predator insects.
Yeah, they do better inside than outside. So they're more effective with hurting your plant inside because, like Bob said, there's no other predators. So try to really Knock it out before you bring it in.
All right, Nicole, thanks a lot for the call. And over to John in Charlton. John, you're on.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have three pear trees in my backyard, and I have a bumper crop of pears this year. I have struggled in the past with determining what the best time to pick them is, what the best methods of storage is, and what the best way to ripen them just before we eat them. My family's depending on me not to screw this up.
I don't have a lot of experience with long-term storage of pears specifically, but, you know, like all fruit, keeping it cool is going to, you know, cool and dry is going to be probably the best way to store it. You know, refrigerator is going to certainly keep them longer. That said, pears do take a little while to ripen, so picking them when they look kind of ripe, which is probably about now, I've been noticing several ripe pears, and even though they're hard, they're ripe officially to come off the tree, but they will probably need to sit around for, depending on the variety, anywhere from a few days to a few weeks. Bartlett's are notorious for taking a little while to ripen up, so you could just stage all of that, harvest them as they look correct, put them in some kind of container where you're going to, if you got a lot of them, you can stash some in a cool place. Leave the rest of them on the table. If you want to throw a banana nearby.
That's what I like to do.
Yeah, that'll make it happen more quickly.
Pears just don't store as well as apples. They just don't. And the harder varieties will be easier to keep. You know, like a Seckel will keep longer than a Bartlett because it's just a harder flesh to begin with.
Okay. Well, John, thanks a lot. We've left him speechless. We've done our job, gentlemen. Over to Karen in East Greenbush. Karen, you're on.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had a problem the past couple of years with my garden crashing and burning prematurely.
Yeah.
Everything starts out wonderful. My tomatoes were gorgeous this season. The zucchini were the biggest I've ever seen. And then it seems like as soon as they set fruit, everything just shriveled up and died. I got, you know, a handful of zucchini, and I did get some tomatoes, but everything is all done, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong, so.
I don't know that you're doing anything wrong. Yeah. It's usually weather-related, mostly, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I did notice the, I had actually some of the best zucchini summer squash ever. My issue has always been squash borers, and they make the plant crash sometime mid-late summer. But there are some leaf diseases, some powdery mildew, some little viral issues that can also make the plant crash. And again, it's usually at the end of the season. Rotating the crops is really a good idea. So don't plant your zucchini in the same place, for 3 years in a row. Make sure you move them around so you have maybe three different spots. You know, alternate that with your tomatoes. Or
it
other
is.
Things.
One of the difficulties people are having with these small spaced gardens and these raised gardens is they have less room
right. And
less ability to rotate. And I think that brings up a lot of problems.
Yeah, sometimes you crowd them into those spaces too, and then it doesn't get enough air circulation. You want to definitely have a good space between all the plants, and that helps to promote more longevity through the year. Another great tip in general, and if you have a source for this, you're lucky. But if you find a gardener in your area, a vegetable gardener, and you're after vegetables, and they work on heirloom varieties, or they just work on ones that have been more acclimated or more situated for the zone and the site that you're actually in, those plants, especially if they've been bred over and over and over for generations, they're going to do a lot better. They're going to be more resistant, and you'll have way better luck. So just pulling a tomato plant out of the classic store may not mean that it's suited for your area. It might do well for a while and then crash and burn too. So look for a good source for good quality plants that are suited for your zone, not for someone else's.
And I would like to add that if you're, you know, we talked about fertilizing some things earlier, but if you're not making sure that they're getting everything they need, if you're not adding fertilizer when you plant or shortly thereafter so that the plants are growing aggressively, it is hard for them to really perform.
Yeah, and adequate watering and uniform watering throughout the season. If they dry out.
Of course, this year we had so much that that's contributed to the problem.
We did. And then it went dry, actually.
As we heard earlier, tomatoes are green this year anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Karen, good luck with that. We appreciate it. Let's get another one in or two in before the next break. And it looks like it is time for Monty in Glens Falls. Monty.
Hi, how are you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I got a lilac bush that's quite old. And I want to cut it back hard. It's got some, very large, rotted out stems and stuff, and it's kind of gangly. When is the good time to do that? How should I do that?
Yeah, the best time to sort of rejuvenate it would be springtime when the buds begin to swell, but they haven't actually opened yet, and you could come in and cut that plant back pretty aggressively, and it will send up a ton of new sprouts, but unfortunately it won't get flowers that season. So if you wanted to do so, that's one option. A rejuvenation, you can cut it back hard, you're going to lose blooms, but you're going to get a nice new shrub one season, and that gets done in the spring when buds swell but before they open. Option B is you don't want to lose your flowers and you don't want to take it all down, then you could wait till after it blooms in the spring and then selectively take out about one third of the oldest, biggest canes and then sort of shape the remainder of the canes that are there to give you a more uniform plant. That's assuming that you have some younger canes there to replenish the big old ones that you're going to take away. Yeah. If they're all just big and old and you virtually have very little growth that's small and young stems, then you're really forced to the rejuvenation pruning, which is the one that you do prior to bud break.
So a variation on that. What if he didn't care about the blooms, but he did have a fair amount of significant young growth already existing? Could he take out the big ones now?
Well, it wouldn't. You would lose some vigor. I think you wouldn't get as much plant back, but it wouldn't. I would say definitely wouldn't kill it. It would be okay.
The reason I'm not going to steal the question, but a lot of people often want to do pruning in the fall, and we're pretty much always telling them, as you said, not to do that now because it's not an ideal time. But in this case, if the lilac had a lot of younger, smaller growth that was 4, 5, 6 feet and was going to already take over. As once you took out the big ones, you could do it this fall.
It would be okay. Yeah.
We're joined today by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
WMC comes from Capital Roots, working to make fresh, healthy, and local food accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods and striving to make fresh, affordable food a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio, privatefinancialdesign.com, securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin, Jane Iredale Retail Shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington, janeiredale.com. And 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, newly renovated, providing local and seasonably inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20railroadpublichouse.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined by Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. It's the Gardening Show, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute. But first, let's take care of an email or two, and this one's from Joe. This is the first year in 20 years I had horned tomato caterpillars. Anything I can do to prepare in the soil in raised beds to prevent these?
Not that I know of. I think that constant vigilance is, so next year when the plants are out there, start looking at them and just keep looking for those guys because they blend in, but they're
big enough you can find them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so. It seems like a good year for them, too. I've seen more complaints about them this year than normal.
I haven't, but I think it's cyclical. I think you get it, and then if you find them before they lay eggs around, then you'll hopefully not get them for a while.
Wind it down. Yeah.
All right, this one is from Gina. I planted 6 hydrangeas 3 years ago in a cluster. 5 started blooming beautifully this year. The 6th is 1/3 bigger than the other 5 and is not blooming, obviously putting energy into leaf, not bloom. All have been treated exactly the same. Why has this happened?
Bet you that one's a different variety.
It could be a different variety, but I tell you, we plant stuff out in the field, and you plant a row of 20 or 30 or something, and you'll go along, and they'll be all the same size, and then for two or three plants, they'll drop down in size, and then they'll come back up in size, and the difference in a few feet in the soil can be different.
Yes, too. Could amazing. Be, yeah. There's we don't know is the answer.
They don't know. Yeah,
it could be a different variety. Could be soil. This need more info.
This one is from Valerie. When is a good time to move my hydrangeas that refuse to bloom into a more sunny locale?
Not now.
We would suggest spring.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Before they leaf out.
You could do it late in the fall if you wanted to, but early in the spring before they leaf out.
When they're sleeping.
Yeah. All right. And last email and then back to the phones. This is from Michael. Please save me from the Japanese knotweed. We have a brook in the backyard of the house we own and rent. It's not there all the time. It has really taken over this year. How can I safely kill this plant? It's getting everywhere, and it's near a water source. Ray, what's your favorite Steely Dan song? Well, I'll think about that while these guys answer this.
You know, if you could mow it, if you could repeatedly mow it low, you will win. If it's in a spot where you could do that, I've wiped it out. Numerous spots where you could just keep bringing that mower over and over.
Realistically, 5 years.
Yeah, it takes a while, even with the mowing, though.
And persistence. That means, yeah, that's being persistent.
It
persistent.
Is.
Not very letting persistent. It get back to 3 or 6 feet ever.
Yeah, never, because then it starts to get its energy back and you reset it. But as you continue to mow it, you will watch the vigor slowly dissipate.
It's a long-term fight.
Cornell has a pretty good publication on controlling that with chemicals if you're interested in using chemicals.
We've cut ours, and when we moved in, the whole hill was literally full of them.
Yeah, it's
and they're
a bad
throughout
one.
The garden, throughout the pachysandras and everything, and we have to just cut them.
We
got them to go more or less away, but they're coming back, and it's a never-ending fight.
I've seen them go through blacktop, right up through blacktop.
Yeah, we've been battling one patch at DR, and I will say this year we actually won. It did not come back. It was the first year, and it's like 3-4 years. Yeah.
Three or four years
of mowing it.
Favorite Steely Dan song? I don't know. Everything must go, I guess. It's sort of the story of my career.
Story of our lives.
Let's go to Kathy in Clinton. Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two or three white pines, and one of them is kind of near an area where I walk a path to get to the car in the driveway. And so I occasionally prune it so I don't hit my head. and I've noticed in the past when I prune, I get a lot of sap oozing.
Yep.
And I just wondered if I was doing it at the wrong time of year.
Well, you know, if you with a white pine, pines in general, when you do cut them, they do tend to ooze sap. But typically, I tell people prune them in the dormant season because of not so much the sap ooze, but there are some insect pests. One of them called a pitch mass borer. And that guy looks for fresh wounds to lay eggs, and then those little critters start tunneling around in there, and then they create a lot more sap ooze. So now they create a bigger problem. So if you prune them in the dormant season, by the time the pitch mass borer is around, the pruning wound is now dry, and it looks for fresh wet wounds. So typically, you would do that dormant season. Now, does it hurt them in the summer? Not necessarily, but you really don't want to get, if you see excessive sap ooze, it could be the insect that's getting in there. So I would recommend dormant season, ideally.
So late fall or very early spring?
Oh, winter. You could do winter.
Okay,
yep.
Winter.
Yep.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number, and Anthony in Kingston is next. Anthony.
Hi, guys. Hi. So we've had this ongoing issue for years now in our garden where we get this like powdery mold looking stuff on all our squash leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to figure out like what, I saw some things on the internet said like put baking soda or something on it. And how do we get rid of it? Because it keeps on killing our squash.
So again, here we are at the end of the season. If you have some leaves with powdery mildew on them, they probably are finished off. It's not, it's not going to be gotten rid of any this year. In the spring, next year, when the plants look beautiful in June, you could consider doing a regular treatment of that recipe with the baking soda that you found or some other fungicide that says it controls powdery mildew.
And there's some organics that would do that for you, but you have to do it before you see it.
That's it. Yeah, it's a preventative as opposed to a cure.
Okay. So is there anything,
Does it have to do with like where we plant them or
better air circulation?
And sometimes like late, like now.
Yep. Better air circulation, more sun, all are very helpful. So not having the garden be too crowded, you know, having a nice open space, lots of sun, set some fans up.
Okay.
You know.
Anthony, thank you for the call. By the way, I never mentioned this, but if you really want to make our engineer Zach Malloy wince, you'll use a speakerphone. If possible, and I know if you're driving, sometimes you gotta use a speakerphone. You want to be hands-free. Okay, I get it. But if you're home, try not to do it, and we'll prolong Zach's life by at least a year or two. All right, Zach, I said it there. Everything's fine. Let's go to line three and Judy in Dalton, Mass. Judy, you're on.
I am in my 80s, but I've noticed in the last few years there's so many vines and so many trees, and my land goes to a section, and then there are trees. And now they're just covered with all kinds. It's like a jungle. Why has this happened in the recent years? Yeah. And what can I do?
So the vine you're probably talking about, we just had a conversation on, is bittersweet. Bittersweet. This is Orient.
No, it isn't bittersweet. It doesn't have any. It doesn't have any bittersweet. I know what bittersweet is.
Does it have a compound?
Go everywhere.
Does it have a compound leaf, like made up of many leaflets, like more palmately compound? If you know what that is.
Well, of course, there are the cucumber vines, which are very easy to pull up. But these vines, I can't pull up. I mean, I could never take
woody.
Care of them.
So if it's not bittersweet,
they're very woody.
If it's not grape,
could be Virginia creeper.
Could be Virginia creeper.
We have a good population of that at our house.
Yep.
We actually leave.
And I mean, why do we have it in these years where I never remember this?
Well, it really depends on which vine it is, and then we could sort of, you know, so in general, all of those vines are being spread by birds eating the fruit and then the seed and then landing in those trees and dropping them nearby. Then after, you know, that was probably 5 or 6 years ago, a lot of those bigger vines started sprouting. And so it's been happening for a while. And that's why it's happening.
It's kind of a critical mass thing, too. You get a few of these started and the birds spread them, but it gets to a point where it takes off geometrically. It's just there's some of it, and then all of a sudden when there's a whole lot of it.
Yep. And some of it may be due to invasives that you're seeing around, too. And although you may not have the bittersweet, in general, that's one that we are seeing more and more of in the area because, well, there's more of them. And as they continue, it's high on the invasive species list for New York State. So, you know, there are a lot of
Berkshire
vines
County.
Out there.
I'm in Berkshire County.
Right.
And so I don't know if it's a different infestation here or what. But I just wondered why I never knew these to be.
Well, Greg, you're out that way.
That's what I was going to say. Judy, if you want to take a sample of that, if you're coming to Barrington and drop it off, or if you want to take some photographs and are interested in putting them in an email and sending them to the info@wardsnursery.com, we could have that discussion. We could continue that.
Okay, yep. Judy, thanks a lot for the call. Ben in Mechanicville has been waiting a while. Ben, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a lilac bush that's probably about 4 or 4.5 feet tall, and it's never, ever bloomed.
Is it getting full sun?
No.
That very well is probably the problem. Lilacs will live in shade and actually live in quite a bit of shade, but they won't bloom in shade. So more sun should work quite well. So if you have a chance to move it.
When can I move it without killing it?
You know, if you wait till it's dormant, you know, they tend to work pretty well. I mean, lilacs are pretty good to be able to. I wouldn't move it right now, though. I'd wait till now. At this point, wait till the leaves are dropped off.
A frost or cool weather. So typically, you know, second week of October, anytime after that.
Yep, and they'll do really well. They should transplant well, and once it gets in the sun, you should see flowers happen pretty quickly after that.
All right, terrific. Thank you for the call. And over to Mary in Grahamsville. Mary, you're on. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Oh. Okay. I have a Rose of Sharon that's about 12 or 15 feet tall now, and it's very leggy. When can I prune that?
The best time is in the spring prior to bud break when the buds begin.
In the spring.
Yeah, and when the buds begin to swell, they haven't actually opened yet, they're starting to get fat, right there. You could go ahead and prune that. That's an example of a shrub that blooms on what we call current season's wood. So it literally, you prune it in the spring before bud break. All the new growth, once spring gets there, shoots out, and it forms a flower, and you'll lose virtually no blooms.
First week of May would probably be ideal. And 20%, okay,
because
20%
right
rule.
Now it's so leggy, there's hardly any leaves on it. You know, but I'm getting blooms, though.
Yeah, you might have to wait a few years to get it back to the desired height. Like Greg said, you know, with those, we usually say 20, 25%, quarter of the foliage maximum off at any one particular time, or branches for that matter. So, you know, if it's...
And what is the usual height supposed to be?
You know, it really depends. You know, some people say let them, and I'm one of those, you know, let it just grow to its maximum size. But it often is in places where... its maximum size is not going to be
you could prune it,
an option.
Yeah. Annually so at and keep it 5 or 6 feet.
Yep.
Usually not smaller than that, though.
Okay. Not smaller than 5 or 6 feet.
Well, it's going to be harder to keep it like 3. If you wanted it 3 feet, it would probably be the wrong shrub, pick. Because it's hard to keep it at 3, but it won't be that hard to keep
this
it at 5.
This thing will grow 3 feet if it's that big.
Right. But it'll be easy to keep it at 5 or 6.
Let's go to Ruth in Conway. Ruth, you're on.
Hi. We have several mature, big Lindera benzoin spice bush that we have planted in moist, high shade, I'd call it, and for that beautiful cloud of pale yellow that you get in the spring. But about a year ago, I noticed that some of our larger ones, two of our larger ones, half of the shrub had died. It looked like the bark down toward the ground, like the first couple of feet, was sort of exfoliating. I didn't see a wound particularly, but anyway, it like one whole stem of this these multi-stemmed shrubs would be dead. And we have both male and female plants. I know that one of the ones that's suffered is a female. I don't know if the others, we've got three that are, you know, 6 or 7 feet tall, and one or more of the stems has
I've,
died.
I've noticed some wilt. Pardon? I have actually noticed leaf wilt occurring on some Lindera out there in the forest. This is the first year I've actually noticed it. It does seem to actually be causing some woody dieback as well, so it may be related. I'm not sure what it is. It could be a type of anthracnose. We talked about that with dogwood earlier. What you mentioned, though, is what's great is these plants tend to rebranch and sucker from the base, and so pruning that out and getting new vigorous growth to replace it may actually be the solution.
Just rejuvenate the whole plant.
And you mentioned it was it's in heavy shade, did you say? Heavy shade?
No. High shade.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
It's shaded, but not really dense.
No, you're getting like filtered light in there, and okay, so that's fine. Yep.
And it's a mystery because the research I've seen is that these are, you know, there isn't much that attacks these plants.
Long-term
life of a plant is, though. I don't think Lindera are 50-year-old plants. I think they're, you know, 25 years, and you're getting to the end. And so that's why that pruning back may reinvigorate that base and get you something again.
We do have them at the Arboretum they were planted in probably the 60s, so they're old.
Some do last.
I've had virtually no issues with them ever. They are in a wet site, like she said, a moist, you know, sort of site. They are getting, I would say they're getting more sun than shade, but it is not a full sun. It's like a dappled sun, but definitely more sun than shade. And we've had virtually no problems with those guys at all.
Well, here, let's go over to David in Dalton, Mass. David, you have a minute here or so. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll be quick. We have 5 hybrid crab apples, Syrah type, that are about 3 years old. And on one of them, it started about a month ago, the leaves started falling off from the bottom, and we're about halfway up now, and there's actually no leaves on it. The top half is great.
It sounds like apple scab. I don't know. Are they all the same varieties?
They're all the same variety, and we did spray them for cedar rust the first week in May.
Okay. Well, you know, my guess would be probably more apple scab, which would be if you look at the leaves that are falling, the question to figure this out would be, do you see dark spots on those leaves, like dark?
Yes.
That's apple scab. So for whatever reason, that one's just being attacked. It could be stressed more than the others. And these insects and these diseases will favor a stressed out plant. So that one just might be a little bit more stressed. Maybe the root ball broke when it was planted. Maybe something, you know, whatever, got a little less moisture. But if it has dark spots, it is apple scab.
Is and it fatal?
No, especially this time of year, it's not a fatal disease. And if you wanted to control it, nothing you can do right now except for rake the fallen leaves up with the spots and get them off site. Spring, you could treat for that, and you can control that.
Okay, we have 10 seconds. Email from Elizabeth. What's happening with all of the Norway maples in Rensselaer County?
Tar spot. It's a horrific year for tar spot. It's a fungal disease, and it's one of the worst years I've ever seen for Norway maple tar spot.
I remember 5 or 6 years ago it happened this, though, okay. Too. Every once in a while.
They'll be okay.
Yes, the same recommendation. Rake up the leaves, get them off site, and they'll be fine next year.
Well, you've done it. You've talked me off the ledge again. Well done, gentlemen. Thank you for being here. Support comes from the Alt and Alternative Weekly, providing the Capital Area with in-depth coverage of news, arts, culture, and community. Provoke, inform, inspire, thealt.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned for over 50 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice, hadleygardencenter.com. The VNA and Hospice of the Southwest Region, providing home health and hospice care since 1946 throughout Bennington and Rutland counties, vermontvisitingnurses.org. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks again to Bob, Fred, and Greg for being with us today. Thanks to you for the great calls. Sorry if you didn't get through. It's a jam-packed show. We do the best we can. Well, they'll be on again. Trust me, they will be on again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Deb Malik took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, you know, it's a Food Friday. Oh, boy. Chef Jasper Alexander joins us to discuss fried chicken. Stand by for news.